Our next presenter is Dr. Ali El Hassan. He's the Manager of Water Supply Planning for the Metropolitan Council. He oversees assessment of the region's water supplies and the development of plans in collaboration with partners to ensure that supplies can meet projected demands. Prior to joining the Met Council, Ali worked as a senior water resource engineer in both New Mexico and California. He has more than 20 years of experience in hydrology, water supply and use, water resources planning, and management in both private and public sectors. Thanks for coming, Ali.
Thank you. Thanks for being brave and wait until the end of this conference and attending my presentation. I know there is a lot of factors. It's a long day for everyone, but also it's a traffic jam that you're going to hit outside here. So in the spirit of the conference theme of water planning, I wanted to share some of the experiences that I had before coming to Minnesota. I have been in Minnesota for the last 7 years working as the manager of water supply planning for the Metropolitan Council. But before that, I have about 22 years of experience working in different parts of the world as well as in the United States. So some of the information that I'm going to present, and I have to say this as a disclaimer, it's 22 years old. So it was developed using the technology of 1996. So there is some maps that's developed in old technological formats that I hope that we are developing it today or doing it today. So we are talking about water management at the regional level, groundwater management at the regional level. And in all of these three cases that I'm going to talk about, groundwater models are in the center as the decision support system in all of them. And I'm a big believer of groundwater models. They are not the best tools in the world, but they are the most helpful tools that's available for all of us, especially at a regional level. And so the first case is, I'm going to take you east. I started from Sudan in Africa. That's where I was born. I went to my undergrad school. And then I went to Japan on a full scholarship to do my master's and PhD. I landed in a place north of Tokyo, and my professor handed me a project telling me we have to study this area. And it's an area that's an alluvial fan that has a lot of issues of groundwater. So I'm putting my picture there so that I'm going to use this as, I use my hairline actually, as a history map here, you know, while we are going in this presentation. So by the second case, you're going to see where is my hairline. And by the third case, it's where I am right now. So this area actually is 40% rice fields. The land use in this area is 40% rice fields. 66% of those rice fields are irrigated by groundwater. This is one of the very few areas in Japan that you don't have a lot of urban sprawls, that you still have agriculture in Japan. This is one of the very productive areas in Japan. In the early 90s, there was a low groundwater levels in the region, and there is many springs in the southern part of the region here that start drying out. And these springs are, from a spiritual point of view to many of the Japanese people, it has a very significant point of view, and also for recreational uses. So we started developing a groundwater model for the area. That was my task, is develop a groundwater model for the area. We started working on understanding what's the region. And one of the first things that we wanted to see in the area, or one of the phenomena in the area, is you look at those two rivers in the middle. Those are the rivers that form the alluvial fan in that area, Sabi River and Kuma River. And I'm going to call them Sabi Gawa or Sabi Kawa. Kawa means river in Japanese. So when you have the question at the end of the day that what you learned today, you can say that river means Kawa in Japanese. So those two rivers have very interesting phenomena. Upstream of those rivers, because of the very high permeable riverbeds, all the water come from the mountains, entering the rivers, they disappear under the ground. They are very coarse bed for in that region. And again, at the downstream, about 5 miles from that where that's happening, you see the river back again and flowing. So those are two pictures of the river. You can see them there. Another factor that we needed to consider is we have two types of irrigation systems in the region. The green are rice fields that's irrigated by surface water, canal systems. The blue are rice fields irrigated by groundwater. And you can see that two-thirds of the area are groundwater irrigated. The rest of the region are still undeveloped. But you started seeing a trend in development of a lot of the land into industrial as well as urban areas. We started developing the groundwater model. We tried to understand the conceptual model. We tried to understand the cultural practices and the agricultural practices of the region, because that's a big factor there. And one of the first findings of just understanding the hydrologic system using the model is 45% of the recharge in the area is coming from natural recharge from non-rice fields, about 40% coming from rice fields, and 15% happens in that underflow where the river disappears under the ground. So that's the first thing that we understood in the area. On top of that, while we are starting doing this analysis, my professor came one time to my office and said, guess what? We got more money to do this study. And the reason for that, there is a big political driver that there is a decision that they want to change the political capital of Japan from Tokyo to one of three areas, and this area is selected as one of them. So we're going to have more studies happening in this area. And that's why it's the biggest driver for us became now is not only that we see springs drying out and we see groundwater levels going down, but also there is a big political driver that there is a lot of change that's coming into this area and we need to understand it, and we don't have anything except this groundwater model that we did. And so that was one of the biggest drivers for us. The model results, we did the model calibration, and you can see, as all of you, I tried to put some technical information so that the modelers can be happy at the end of this presentation. And we calibrated the model, we validated the model with data, and then we started running scenarios. So we started looking into so many different scenarios, and this is what took me 6 years to finish my master's and PhD. And by the end, we looked into so many different scenarios that I cannot remember, except I go read my PhD thesis again, which is a very big document. I don't want to do that. But one of the scenarios that we did is we looked into what will happen into the groundwater levels and groundwater storage in the region if we reduce the paddy fields that receive canal water. We found that the water table is going down because most of the irrigation happening in those areas is coming from that surface water that's diverted through the canal system into these paddy fields that's infiltrating into the groundwater. So that's a big recharge zone for us. We tried to reduce the yellow, which is mainly irrigated by groundwater, and we found that the water levels are going higher because you reduce the pumping impact is lower now than what it used to be. And we went ahead and we decided, okay, let's reduce 20% of the rice field all over the place. And that's when we have a very mixed results, higher water levels in the south, lower in the north. And this is related to the type of paddy fields, that's rice fields that's related to that source of water. So this has helped us to communicate with the stakeholders on where the impact of any change of this system that we currently had in 1999, that if we want to decide to change it to urban, where are the best places that they can use? And they use the model to do that. I'm very happy that my model is still used in that area. It's called Ali's model. So someone after me in that same university used my model to develop a nitrate flow model to understand the nitrate movement in the area. And a third one used it for understanding where are the best location for development of urban areas so that they can increase or maintain at least the same recharge that they have and avoid any problems. Then I moved west. I came to the United States. Before I start, I have this trivia question. Take a look. If you are a USGS employee or a previous employee, don't answer because you will know this. If you work in my office, don't answer. So which is this, what is the state that we have the first gauging station in the United States? Don't answer. You used to work in USGS, so. Do we know? Take a guess. Nope. 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 New Mexico. And this is my second case study, and you can see my hairline is going back. Minnesota, it's a town of Empudo on the Rio Grande River. That was the first gauging station in the United States established by USGS. Surprisingly, you might know this, but a lot of the development in groundwater understanding modeling studies was done earlier in New Mexico. Thijs equation, Thijs solution that all of us are using in understanding pumping tests, is developed in New Mexico. And so there was a history of understanding of groundwater in that area. I started working in the Pecos River. Anyone know anything about the Pecos River? Except that the most famous person from that basin is Billy the Kid. That's the only thing I knew about that. So that's the most famous person there. The Pecos River is a huge water basin in comparison to where I came from in Japan. In Japan, I was working with 200 square miles. I came to a 2,500 square miles with so many different water districts, water jurisdictions, issues that's totally different than the ones I used to deal with in Japan. I was very happy to hear the presentation by the lawyer today. It was a great presentation because I have been through a lot of litigations in the Pecos River. The Pecos River, this is the graph that will tell the whole story of the Pecos River. The Pecos River is, it's a shared river between New Mexico and Texas. They tried to develop a compact that divide the amount of water, how much New Mexico gets, how much Texas gets. 1948, that was when they first developed the Pecos River Compact, and New Mexico at that time, that eastern part of New Mexico was not developed as much, and they started, you can see in the graph, there is a lot of water going to Texas. But then they started developing a lot of irrigated agriculture in that area. So you have towns or cities, or used to be towns like Roswell. That's why I have my friend here. Towns like Roswell become big cities. A lot of agriculture develop around it. And now we have Pecos Valley Artesian Groundwater District. So that's the first district that relies 100% on groundwater. Upstream, we have what we call it Fort Sumner Irrigation Districts. This is 100% surface water system. Downstream, very close to the border with Texas, there is Carlsbad Irrigation District, which is 100% surface water that transferred at the end of the, almost in the 70s, into groundwater system. So you can see with all this development, the flow from the river into Texas is going down. So meaning that New Mexico that signed in 1948 has been under-delivering for long time to Texas. 1974, Texas sued New Mexico. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court decided New Mexico and Texas were asking for $200 million fine for New Mexico. They got $14 million. But that sent a message to all stakeholders in New Mexico that from now on, and that's part of the lawsuit, New Mexico, you cannot under-deliver from 1988 going forward. You cannot under-deliver. The minute you under-deliver, we are gonna take the authority of managing that river from you and give it to someone else in the federal government. And so for that reason, which is a very strong regulatory reason, New Mexico started thinking about how we can help ourselves avoid any situations in the future. And part of that, they started developing groundwater models for Roswell Basin, Carlsbad Basin. But one of the things they were missing for a long time, they said that what will happen about the river itself, how the river is operated, because the river is operated by the Corps of Engineers. So the release on the river, the dams on the river are controlled by the Army Corps of Engineers. So you have so many people having their hands into that issue in the Pecos River. And so we started developing what we call Pecos River Decision Support System, which we connected the two groundwater systems or the two groundwater models that we developed with a river operation system model. So we have three big models that all of them, we run them so that we can reach the best solution for this problem. And after so many runs, that's my first job in New Mexico, that I was responsible for running this model. And I cannot tell you how many long years took me to run this model just to understand what will be the best solution for us. At the end of the day, we came up with terms that will work for New Mexico. We needed to retire 11,000 groundwater water rights, 11,000 acre feet of groundwater water rights, and 6,000 of surface water acre feet of water rights. And all of those are owned by agriculture owners. As you know, in the West, it's the prior appropriation. So first come, have the right for the water. And a lot of these water rights are owned by families of farmers who have been transferring them through their family, and they're keeping them through their families. All of a sudden, they became very expensive because the state now is interested in retiring all of this, and the only way to do it is to buy or lease a lot of these acreage and their related water rights. And that's the model helped us to understand how much we need to get that. But then came a problem for us is, where are the best locations where we can retire those and have a better impact on the river? But part of this, and the solution also, is we needed to drill a couple of well fields in places that's not going to impact the river, transfer some of these water rights, and start augmenting the river when we need it. So it's a very complex issue, and I'm going to advise all of you to look into a book called High and Dry, the struggle between, I think the Pecos River struggle between Texas and New Mexico. It's a very interesting book about all the legal issues. So we tried to develop a model that will help, a version of the model to help us how we can transfer water rights from one location to another location without impacting the river. And that's the model that we developed. We call it the superposition model of the Pecos, of the Roswell Basin. And the model itself is a very easy model. We developed it in a way that anyone, not only the state government, can use it, but everyone in the Pecos River. You know, we have farmers who own farms on this side of the basin, and they want to transfer their water rights from this area to another place, and they wanted to run the model to understand what will be the impact. Is this a good thing to do, or is this a bad thing to do? The groundwater model has been a very successful tool. This has been used over the last 10 years or 12 years in the Office of the State Engineer as the administrative tool for water rights on the Roswell Basin. Then that's resulted in us drilling wells, connecting pipelines, augmenting the river. And this was my last job in New Mexico before I leave, heading to California, the land where you hold your public meetings in the police station, because everyone hates everyone in that area. So I'm calling it painful collaboration, because everyone doesn't like anyone. I started working as a consultant for the South Sacramento County. Our first task, and this is a very different situation than on the Pecos River. In the Pecos River, the government was driving a lot of things because they are under the federal government regulations. And they have to follow that. But here it's the stakeholders. They saw a lot of problems in their groundwater use. When I arrived in 2008, 50% of the farmers in this area, they were lowering their pumps into their wells because of the drought of 2007, and then they don't have access to groundwater. And so we have two irrigation districts, two water districts, one watershed, three municipalities, all of them sitting together and going through a really torture process of collaboration so that they can develop a groundwater management for that region. We developed that. I was the lead author of that groundwater management in that area. I advise all of you to look into it. It's South Sacramento Area Water Authority Groundwater Management. And you can look into that into their websites. 95% of this area is using groundwater. It's mostly used by agriculture. Knowing that 30% of the land used in this area is agriculture, and we have 60% undeveloped, that means that there is a big economical driver here for development in that area, whether that's going to be adding more agricultural land or adding more urban areas. And so that was the biggest driver for all of these people to work to maintain and enhance their water supplies for the future. And we use the groundwater model that's developed in that area, again, for evaluating what type of management strategies could work in this area. And we looked into several different management strategies. And this is just hydrographs to see where we are. We looked into a couple of those scenarios for the management scenarios. Conjunctive use was one of them. Groundwater recharge, artificial recharge was the other one. And a combination of those two together in some places. The model helped us. We have specific areas where are available for doing all of this. The model helped us if we do artificial recharge in this location, the impact on the aquifer looks like this. And here is one of the hydrographs of the baseline on the left, and then this is one of the scenarios. You can see groundwater levels are going to increase or be higher in this scenario when we implemented conjunctive use. So in all of these three cases, what we learned, groundwater models are not going to tell us at that regional level exactly you are going to have drawdown if you implement this management strategies by 5 feet, or it's not going to be exact in predicting that. But it could help us in understand what's the difference between comparing scenario A to scenario B. And that's helpful for us managers, planners, on developing these. I really applaud that both the states I worked for before, New Mexico and California, even the model was not the perfect and didn't yield perfect results. At the end of the day, they said, you know, this is a clear guidance for us, and we're going to take it to the next step. They built projects based on the results of the model and implemented some of these in the area. Thank you.